and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast, the special pre-primary edition. My name is Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
Good morning.
Managing Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott, who's reporting on the governor's race for the Tribune and KUT News. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
We're all primary all the time. Well, let's hit the Republicans and then go to the Democrats. So, Evan, do you think there's going to be a runoff at this juncture?
Well, I don't have my kind of Johnny Carson. What's that? Karnak,
right?
I need to put an envelope up to my head and predict this thing. Look, I think that that is really the sole remaining question on the Republican side right now. Is there going to be a runoff or not? It seems, if you believe every single poll taken to this point, it seems a certainty that Governor Perry will come out first. Hutchison and Medina are locked in a battle for second. It seems as if Hutchison is pulling away or if Medina is falling off, but the gap between them is wider today than it was pre-Glenn Beck 9/11 truther flap. And, of course, I don't know whether that's the reason or whether just she peaked too early or
well,
what
Well, you know,
have
the
you.
Original reason here was that they had their debates and Medina then went dark. I mean,
right.
Everybody else has the money to buy TV ads.
In fact, you predicted that the last opportunity for Medina to be in front of everybody, not counting any unplanned implosions on television, was going to be the debates. And, in fact, that's what happened. And so she has fallen off a little bit. So it appears that it's going to end Perry, Hutchison, Medina in that order. And he was in range of making it without a runoff before. The Rasmussen poll that came out yesterday, at least we all know, now had him at 48% with 9% undecided. So he only has to pick off a couple of those folks, and then he's off to the races. You know, I think for the Hutchison campaign, this has got to be, you know, the last thing that they wanted to be confronting only a few days out was the inevitability of her not finishing in first and the possibility of her just being knocked out of this thing completely if he wins without a runoff. It's got to be very depressing for them.
You want to close with some momentum, even if you're closing in second place. And I think you're right. I think the order is Perry, Hutchison, Medina. The question is whether Perry crosses 50 or not, and we have a runoff. You know, it's the political equivalent of Groundhog Day, right? If we get a runoff, we get 6 more weeks of television ads.
And we're already beginning to see earlier than you would have thought, earlier than I would have thought, the sort of circular firing squad stories appearing in the press.
Right.
Some in the state and famously now this Chris Cillizza piece in the Washington Post, mm-hmm. in which people are kind of already asking, why did she lose, as if the primary has already come and gone, Ben. It's kind of horrible.
It's just so funny. I was talking to a group yesterday, and it's just been so weird. We all talked about this heading in, that this was the big fight that we were so excited to cover.
Right.
The big fight between two people that had, you know, more money than God and were going to spend it and beat each other down with ungodlike phrases and commercials. And you know, it... Boy, it's been so boring.
The trailer was much better than the movie, wasn't
it? If it weren't for Deborah Medina, would the GOP race been anything to cover, just about?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, and Evan's right. I mean, Hutchison's in this odd position of being alive, and they're already doing the autopsies. It's, you know, awkward. If they get a runoff, you know, what she has to do if she gets into a runoff next Tuesday is she's going to have to turn this momentum around, or it's just going to be the baton death march.
Well, we need Dr. Frankenstein to reanimate her.
Right.
Right.
I feel like that's the bright side, though, because if you survive into a runoff, you get to survive another day, another 6 weeks worth of days, and, you know, things could change. You know, Rick Perry could be caught in some massive scandal that hasn't turned up yet. We don't know. So at least for her, if she can make it into a runoff, she can reboot.
So time's on her side. On the other hand, I wonder if anything else is. You know, the funders out there who have supported her campaign to this point, and Ben's right, you know, she certainly had a lot of money. There was the problem with the Hutchison campaign, whatever it has been.
It wasn't
it
finance.
Was not
it wasn't, it
money.
Wasn't political talent. She has great right. consultants. And
frankly, it wasn't antipathy to Rick Perry not being at the level that she hoped, because the reality is Governor Perry, as you've pointed out many times, Ross, has not gotten to 50% in any poll since the uncontested Republican primary back in 2006.
Right.
There is definitely a pretty good chunk of people in the state, not just everybody, but Republicans specifically, who find the governor wanting. So it's the right conditions for her to run. It's money she had. She's obviously a talented politician. Time is about the only thing, though, if we get into a runoff, at least, that she has on her side. And I continue to maintain, I am a party of one on this, that the Hutchison campaign is going to have to ask itself, if she is more than 20 points down going into a runoff, and he's within a hair's breadth of 50, is she going to be able to go out and raise money from funders? Is she going to have the motivation to go forward, the energy? is the calls are going to come. You're going to cause the state to spend all this money on a runoff. Now, if it's close or if it's sort of close to close, I see no reason to even have that conversation. But I just wonder what's going to happen the morning after.
Well, I would challenge you on whether it actually is the best conditions for her to run, because this year is obviously this very anti-incumbent year. There's definitely an anti-Washington mood. She's both. Perry has somehow cast himself as not the incumbent out of the two of them. So the fundamentals for her, I don't think, or the situation and the environment for her, I don't think are necessarily that great. So I would blame conditions and time together.
You'd say, though, that 6 months ago, before all this stuff went to pot, we thought that conditions might be better for her. I mean, he's been governor for 10 years, and somehow he's managed to make himself to be the outsider.
He turned the inside game into Washington. He did this last April when he did the famous secessionist comments down at Austin City Hall. He turned Washington into the place of incumbents and Austin into a place not of incumbents. I mean, you know, he walks into this race and he says, basically, you know, we Texans together are fighting those people in Washington, painted Hutchison over there, painted him over here. People do that in politics all the time. She didn't paint back. She never came back at that, and never. She let him frame the argument, and when he frames the argument, he won it.
Isn't it just amazing how essentially in 2 days, last April, he was able to just completely get out ahead of the wave? You know, he had the day before that rally, he had a press conference in the middle of the Capitol with a state lawmaker who was pushing a resolution reinforcing the 10th Amendment.
The Brandon Creighton thing, right.
And, you know, so he has that, and he talks about, you know, who are you going to stand with, Texas or the federal government? The next day he goes out and talks about secession, and I know a lot of people rolled their eyes at this.
Right.
And instead of it being another, oh, what an embarrassment, it was him getting out in front of that wave, and when the wave swelled, shoved him right across.
Well, the debate was it crazy for him to do it or crazy like a fox? And I think the answer clearly was the latter, because he was anticipating that this movement would rise up around him. And he was playing, frankly, to the Republican base. Had there not been a national movement, fueled by anger and outrage and hostility to Washington, nonetheless, the Republican base in Texas was much more susceptible to this kind of appeal. And so he was smart to anticipate that. I want to come back, though, to Hutchison, Ross. You know, there has been material out there for her to attack the governor on. Emily Ramshaw did a story for us yesterday about the trio of social service messes that happened on his watch,
right.
The TYC scandal, the CPS scandal, and the Fight Club,
services, right.
And the Fight Club scandal in Corpus Christi at the state schools. And, you know, her campaign manager, Terry Sullivan, came back in the story and said, well, you know, we don't think this is what Republican primary voters care about. They care about cronyism. I mean, goodness gracious, this is material being handed to them, and whether or not it's fair to attack the governor, they just chose not to go there.
It's really interesting. I mean, you know, to some extent, you can run a campaign, if you're an incumbent, you run on everything good that happened while you were in office. If you were running against an incumbent, you run against everything bad that happened while they were in office. Perry's been in office for 10 years. Some bad stuff has happened. I mean, whether you blame him for it or not, if you're in a political environment, you blame him for it, and you try to hang it around his neck. For example, we, you know, had a story earlier on, I guess in November, that said about 130,000 kids don't graduate from high school every year. Times 10 is about 1.3 million who didn't graduate while this guy was governor. And you're not running on that?
Why are you not running ads calling him governor dropout?
You know, not to suggest what the ads should be, but, you know, there are these kinds of things that accumulate. Hutchison hasn't really picked them up. I mean, one of the things, you know, in a broad sense that she's failed to do in this campaign is give people a quick, digestible reason why they should vote for change, and second, why she should be the change they vote for.
Well, but
she's never done that.
But the second part, you know, Ben, and at least this is the other part that I think is interesting, is could you articulate the affirmative case for voting for Senator Hutchison? I can sort of articulate the negative case based on what she said about the governor. But if you pinned me down, held me at knife point, Jack Bauer style, and said, tell me the things that Kay Bailey Hutchison will do as governor that are materially different from Rick Perry – I can speak in generalities. I'm not sure I can speak in very specific terms.
This is where I think she was in a bad place because she's running in a Republican primary. I think the affirmative argument for her is that she's really willing to work within the system to try and push for change, right? That's what she's proven to do in Washington. However, if you're willing to work within the system in Washington, you're basically a tool of Washington, yeah. a pawn of Washington. And so
you're making his argument for
right.
him.
Right. And so she's just in this really tough place in a primary. But I feel like she was an effective senator, is an effective senator in many ways, except what she does that's effective is seen as terrible, like earmarks, which is what all senators do. But, you know, bringing home the bacon is not something you want to brag about this year.
Well, you know, if the Republicans, if Senator Hutchison's campaign indeed is not interested in going after some of these scandals or incidents, whatever, that happened during the Perry administration, I would assume that someone like Bill White is licking his chops and getting those commercials ready.
That's a great pivot point, actually, because I feel like a lot of these themes are something a Democrat could more effectively play
on. Well, and in fact, you know, what some believe is the hypocrisy of Governor Perry running against the federal government, standing out there at the time that the unemployment insurance funds were available from Washington during the last session and thumping his chest, "I will not take their money." Well, the reality is the state took quite a lot of the federal government's money.
$17 billion.
The governor just didn't take the money he didn't want, but he was happy to take the rest of the money. And so it's Hutchison, or frankly, to make the pivot with you, Elise, White had an opportunity to say, this guy's a fraud. This guy's a hypocrite. You know, he says he hates the federal government. Well, then don't take any of the money. If you hate the federal government so much, turn it all down. He didn't. I'm not suggesting that either one should do that, but certainly the opportunity for Hutchison to turn his argument against her, against him, was there, and I'm sure that White intends to do the same thing.
Yeah, if there's a runoff, Hutchison has to reframe this and get into, you know, some of the things that you're talking about. If she doesn't win she doesn't get a runoff, then it's White's turn. And you're exactly right. You have to show the case against the incumbent. You got to tell them why the toothpaste they're using now doesn't work, what's deficient about it, and then show them the new toothpaste. I mean, it's a simple replacement sale.
Does White, if there is a runoff, does White have to stay dark? I mean, he can't necessarily go out. I mean, he could introduce himself, I guess, but he can't start attacking Perry because that might help Kay Bailey Hutchison in a runoff, right?
If you're White, I think you stay out of a runoff. But I think the minute that the Republican nomination is settled, you know, 40 or 50 or 60% of Texans don't really know Bill White. And Bill and Rick Perry or Kay Hutchison would love to define him. He has to define himself.
You guys are giving up on the Shami campaign this easily?
No.
I hate to do it. It's been such a great content provider.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. He's like the Anna Nicole Smith of campaigns. The problem with the Shami, I mean, we need to deal with the issue of the primary and Shami. And I think that, you know, you asked, Elise, is Perry going to get through Tuesday without a runoff? Well, the answer is maybe. Is White going to get through Tuesday without a runoff? The answer is he better.
Almost certainly.
Well, almost certainly, and he better, because if for whatever the reason he didn't get to 50%, that would be a much more crushing blow to White than it would be to Perry.
There's a
it?
Really interesting problem here. I mean, you know, there are seven people running for the Democratic nomination, and that's, you know, if you're a middle finger voter, if you're like, I'm against all of the establishment guys, and you just pick one of the other six and vote against White. So that's a problem. I mean, you may vote for Starlock. You may vote for Felix Alvarado. I'm not going to name them all because I can't. But they could bleed some votes here. Shami hasn't gotten over 10 or 15, over 15% in any poll I've seen. He's been over 10 in a couple of them. But that hasn't caught fire. White's been in the mid-50s in most of these things. He's got to win or the appearance is terrible.
Yeah,
we talked to him last night. He was in Austin, I guess Wednesday night then, and asked him what he would be doing with all that spare time. And he said he didn't really answer the question, which is very typical White because he's smart that way. But he did talk a lot about how Perry and Hutchison will likely just continue to beat each other up while he's talking about ideas and all this stuff. So I think you're right, Ross, that he is going to stay out of it and continue to run. I'm Bill White. This is my ugly child photo. awkward child photo.
Right.
Well, in every way,
I'm about the same age. We all had that haircut.
Yeah. In every, well, I'm glad to see he had any. Actually,
yeah, right.
Well,
yeah. Right. Or me for that.
In every way, the Perry White, if it is indeed a Perry White fall election, the contrasts could not be more stark.
Right.
And in some ways, the White campaign is probably spoiling for that fight. They really want that to be the race that they run. And so you're correct. They don't want to attack Perry in the interim and then inadvertently help Hutchison get back over the line. On the other hand, you know, he can't count on the Hutchison people being so miffed by the runoff that they're going to suddenly stay home or cross over and vote for him. I think that every campaign has this notion that there's going to be this crossover vote, there's going to be this protest vote, these unlikely voters are going to suddenly turn out. This is going to be a fairly straightforward race if it gets to the fall and it's Perry and White. And, you know, White's got to hope that he's able to raise as much money or enough money to be competitive, right?
Right,
As Perry.
The Democrat in this race has to push the rock up the hill. It's still a red state. It's still a Republican state. Right. Rick Perry, whether you like him or not, is probably the best politician we have in the state right now. He's got charisma. He presents well on the road. People like him. He's their strategy and their tactics are good. And he's got – this is an intangible, but it's played a lot in this stuff. He's had his team together for 10 years. And, you know, when something happens out there in the sticks, those guys respond very quickly. This campaign functions. It's pretty widespread. He's got his feelers out all over the state. This is a formidable machine for the Democrats.
He's run statewide a number of times. He knows how to do that. White has run in the city of Houston, period.
Right.
Right.
Right. Perry's been doing it for 20 years. So, you know, it's an uphill battle for the Democrat. That said, White has the ability to raise money. He's from the state's biggest population and vote center and, you know, money center.
It's the largest city in the state.
Right.
Right.
The media market's over a quarter of the voters. You know, when you include the counties outside of Houston that are subject to the Houston media market, they didn't vote for Mayor White, but they watched him on the news every night. So, I mean, he's got a pretty good base. He's a, you know, he's got the ability to position himself here as a moderate, although Perry will paint him to the left. I'm assuming Perry, but, you know, the Republican will try to paint him to the left. He'll try to paint himself to the center, and they'll be fighting over independent voters and moderates.
And that's the point, Ben. You know, these polls that came out this week that showed a competitive race in the fall between Perry and White, I think Rasmussen had 6 points.
And it's gotten closer. I mean, you know,
But without any attacks at all by the Perry campaign on White. No one has come after White with a negative ad yet.
Right, right.
Well, I would argue that nobody's come after, well, except for K. Bailey Hutchison, a Democrat hasn't come after Perry either. Hasn't used some of these things that we talked about earlier, some of the incidents with different social service agencies, you know, and we'll see if it matters.
But, you know, unlike White, Perry does have someone on TV saying he's a bad mamma jamma. I mean, nobody's come after White.
That's true. That's true.
Know, at all. So,
But I think it's interesting that he was able to close a little bit after he first started putting up those high on Bill White ads. So, I mean, he's had a little bit of movement, maybe because of just the attacks on the other side that are, you know, they're eating each other alive at the moment, and maybe a little bit because he's finally then had that chance to introduce himself, and we'll see what happens from there. But, yeah, Perry's going to come after him like a buzzsaw. And at least, I guess, maybe he knows it's coming. It really appeared like Senator Hutchison didn't know it was coming. And sat back and let the buzzsaw kind of get halfway through her before she realized that it hurt?
I think until fairly, you know, I think Hutchison was as surprised, frankly, as the rest of us were when Perry said, I want to run for another term. I think that, you know, sort of psychologically, they had prepared for a succession and not for a challenge.
And didn't have a plan B.
Yeah, and they never sort of locked into they never seemed to. I mean, you know, I'm sure they did. I mean, you know, But they never seem to really fully get around the idea that, you know, we're going to have to knock this guy off to get his chair. Yeah.
Sometimes the conventional wisdom is the conventional wisdom because it's true.
Right.
And the conventional wisdom at the beginning of this race was, the one thing to watch out for was, she's never had a tough race.
She had one, and she lost it.
Going back to Steve Bartlett defeating her for Congress.
Right.
Back in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And people said, you know, she has a glass jaw. She's not really had to run against anybody competitively. And if somebody really comes after her, she doesn't have much practice at rebuffing that.
Right. This argument is that she won in 1990 the treasurer's job because she was running against a lady named Nikki Van Hightower at the same time that Rick Perry and Karl Rove were running against Jim Hightower. And anybody with the name Hightower on the ballot was having a tough year. And that Hutchison won the Senate seat in 93, not really at the ballot box, but in a courthouse in Fort Worth when Ronnie Earl folded up a case against her, and she came into a race as, you know, this wrongly besieged Republican who'd been through a political prosecution and wiped out Bob Krueger. So, I mean, the really tough races, you know, have been the Bartlett one and the Perry one.
And that's it. Now, I know you want to go, Elise. Can we talk about something for another minute, which is what else on Tuesday to look out for, since this is the last podcast before Tuesday?
Right. Next time we meet, the dust will have settled.
We will be able to analyze what happened. I want to just say that I am really eager as an observer of the Tea Party phenomenon to see Tuesday as a put-up-or-shut-up day. You know, they filed a whole bunch of candidates in a whole bunch of races against sitting Republicans. And the success of those candidates against incumbent Republicans is going to say a lot about the strength of this movement. As Ross has said before, are they loud or are they effective?
Yeah, are they, you know, are they big or are they just loud? It's just, you know, yeah. Watch Charles Perry in the Delwyn Jones race in Lubbock. Watch the two guys running against Kevin Brady for Congress down in the North Houston suburbs. Watch the Plano seat.
The Mabry-Jackson race,
this
right?
This is where Brian McCall is leaving the Texas House and there's an open seat there.
Right.
Watch that one. Watch Vicki Truitt's race in North Tarrant County, and watch Todd Smith's race, and those sort of the canaries in the coal mine.
You'll know at that point whether there's something to this or not. Right. And if there's not something to it, you know, the theory that has been floated over the last couple of days is, well, you know, even if it doesn't happen at the ballot box this time, the Tea Party is going to mobilize aggressively on behalf of whichever Republican wins,
right.
And they're just going to knock off a bunch of incumbent Democrats in the fall. You know, that remains to be seen.
The two problems they're having, Reeve Hamilton wrote a story for us on the Tea Party in Collin County in particular, and they've got three Tea Parties up there. They're sort of wrestling over, you know, who's gonna be in charge here. They haven't coalesced around a particular idea yet, and they haven't coalesced around a particular candidate yet. And maybe in this election, whether it's in Texas or nationally, they'll start to form, you know, around, they'll start to, you know.
What about Medina, though?
Magnetize around something. Well, Medina's an interesting thing because Medina actually, in sort of the fractious Republican politics, is more of a libertarian candidate. She's associated more with Ron Paul. She's grabbed some of the Tea Party vote, but if you go to some of these rallies, a lot of the Tea Party people are with Perry. In fact, Perry's closer, you know, sort of loop back to the beginning of this. One of Perry's closing ads is about the 10th Amendment. And, you know, he's sitting there in front of a Texas flag and he's talking about issues. And if you listen to him and sort of watch the code words, he's talking to the Tea Party people and the Medina mm-hmm. people. He's trying to bleed votes away from
Come
Medina.
Home, he's saying.
Trying to bleed votes away from Medina so he doesn't go to a runoff. But a lot of those people, I think, are going to Perry and not necessarily to Medina.
And the Medina people will say that that's actually the fake Tea Party. They were actually the real Tea Party, and the Perry Tea Party is co-opted by, you know, Glenn Beck and other corporate interests. But that's neither here nor there. Let's wrap this up. Next week, we will be back for a post-primary Tribcast, another very special edition. If you have any comments, podcasts at texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan Ross and Ben, my name is Elise. Thank you for listening.